I do like 70s punk music. The Clash is probably one of my favorite bands. Unsurprisingly, London Calling is something that I listen to on a fairly regular basis. I do also like the Ramones. Blitzkrieg Bop is another one of my favorites. And I'm starting to get into the Dead Kennedys, which I guess is the American infecting me.
Tactopia.
Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, med støtte fra Industriens Fond, Messecenter Herning, Index Award og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Manden, vi hørte i starten, som er glad for punkmusik fra 70'erne, det er Mark Rogers. Han er en white hat hacker, og han er ikke en hvilken som helst hacker. Han er nemlig manden bag tv-serien Mr. Robot, eller rettere sagt, han er manden bag de tekniske løsninger i serien Mr. Robot, som har fået meget, meget, meget ros for sin meget virkelighedstro hacker-scenarier.
So I actually started a TV series in the UK called The Real Hustle. And in The Real Hustle, what we did was demonstrate vulnerabilities that people had talked about and show that they could be done on camera. We'd do things like put on high visibility jackets and walk into electronic shops, take plasma screens off the wall and walk out with them. And guess what? It worked. I set up a Wi-Fi access point in a hotel that mimicked the hotel's access point and got people to log into it. When they did, I collected their credit cards and we went shopping and did it all on camera. Just showing that actually these things are more common than people realize. We then did talks about how you avoid getting scammed, how to recognize fake access points, how to challenge someone who's doing something that seems, you know, high risk and maybe we should do something about it, how to counter things like CFO fraud emails. You know, if someone sends you an email asking for a lot of money, you should have processes in place to validate it and not fall for it. Google and Facebook fell for over $100 million because of fake invoices. And if Google and Facebook can fall for this stuff, what hope do the rest of us have?
Hello, friend. That's lame. Maybe I should give you a name. But that's a slippery slope. You're only in my head. We have to remember that. Evil Corp. A conglomerate of evil. And now I have to help him.
Oh, hi. Tyrell Wellick, Senior Vice President Technology.
Elliot, just a tech.
Well, so the Mr. Robot stuff came because of the Real Hustle. I had one of the producers reach out to me to ask me before the show started what my ideas about doing it. And I said, what we should do is we should make it as real as possible. They were thinking along the same lines as well. And so we started talking about the best way to do it. And the idea that came up with was they would create a script. And instead of a script being like, this happens, the end. What they would do is they'd write a script, and wherever hacking was involved, they'd leave a hole. They'd say, the desired outcome is this. And then we, technical experts, would debate the best way to achieve their desired outcome and would come up with realistic things. And most of the time it worked out really well. We came up with, in some cases, slightly simpler hacks than they were hoping for, but they were realistic hacks. And that resonated with the public. Sometimes we said things that they didn't really like. And one of my suggestions that never made it to the screen was they wanted Elliot to steal a zip car. A zip car is a rental car you can get from San Francisco. You use an RFID card, you place it up against the car and it unlocks the car. They wanted us to hack into the system and compromise the database and build a card. And I'm like, I could put a brick through the window, start the car and drive it off. And they're like, it's not sexy enough. So, I mean, there was a little bit in to and fro, but to their credit, they listened. And as a result, they're now known for being the show with the best stuff. Whereas on the other hand, whenever I watch CSI Cyber, I throw things at the TV.
Mark Rogers, han er meget mere end Mr. Robot. Han er også meget optaget af, at børn skal undervises i IT og lære at programmere i skolen, og så står han hvert år for sikkerheden på den store hackerkonference DEFCON i Las Vegas, og det går ikke stille af sig.
So handling security at DEFCON seems like it must be quite a task.
I mostly look after things like physical security and dealing with groups like law enforcement who come in and dealing with the hotel to make sure that everyone's happy, but yes, it keeps me very occupied. My first ever DEFCON was DEFCON 6, and when I came in, the satellite dishes from the roof of the hotel were riding up and down in the elevators. It kind of gives you an idea of what the old DEFCON used to be. DEFCON today is a completely different animal. It's more about information, inclusivity, and I don't think I've had to deal with major damage in at least 10 years, but that's how it started. Well, so in the past, it was kind of a bit of a Wild West, and we would try to get people away before they got caught. And then as things evolved, we ran into problems where people would learn techniques from talks like, this is how you hack an ATM, or this is how you disable a camera, or this is how you disable Wi-Fi. And my job became one of negotiating with the hotel and negotiating with law enforcement to try and stop these kids from going to jail, because 99% of them are not trying to do something malicious. They've learned something and they want to try it out. And they go and they find an ATM in the casino and they play with it. What they don't realize is the ATMs in the casino have the most cameras pointed at them out of any item in the world. And so minutes later, they get arrested and there are problems. And my job is to try and minimize the damage, make sure that they get a slap on the wrist, maybe get kicked out of the hotel, but don't end up with a criminal record that could spoil their lives.
Could you tell us about some of the hacks you did? Because you did some quite famous hacks. Which one did you enjoy the most?
I've enjoyed almost all of them in different ways. I believe firmly that anything man makes, man can break. It's just a matter of time and a matter of application of knowledge. And I like to try and do different things. And so when I was in Vodafone, I started out hacking mobile phones because they were available and no one had hacked them before, and it was an interesting thing to do. Later on, I started playing with devices, IoT, hardware. When Google Glass came out, I hacked it by creating an image where if you looked at the image with Google Glass, it hacked your Google Glass.
And what could you do with a Google Glass then?
Well, the hack there was you used a code that when they looked at it, the hack there was an image where when you looked at it, it programmed Google Glass to connect to a Wi-Fi device that you were carrying. And that would then deliver an Android exploit, which would then root the glass and allow you to remotely take control of it and do whatever you want. And in my case, I put up images. And it was kind of funny, you know? My long-term plan was to put a T-shirt out and take it to DEFCON. But we went through responsible disclosure and had it fixed. And so it was fixed before DEFCON came along. I hacked Touch ID on the iPhone. 12 hours after it was released, there was actually a race between me and Starbug from the CCC to see who could break it first. In the end, I was able to lift a fingerprint from glass, copy it, make an imitation fingerprint, and then use it to unlock the device. That was fun. I mean, it's not a technical hack like people think of, but it was a fun hack. And of course, then there's the one that everyone knows about, which is hacking the Tesla Model S. We found a number of relatively low-rated vulnerabilities. By chaining them together, we were able to take control of the car and drive it with an iPhone. And not only was it a fun experience doing it, but it also taught a really big lesson, and that is you can't discount the low vulnerabilities. Those things that you put in Jira and say, do not fix, actually, if you get enough of them, if each one gives you an inch and you have enough, you can take a mile. And that's what happened. And we worked with Tesla to fix them, to at least fix most of them, to try and address it. And when we did our talk at DEFCON, the cars were secured, so there were no issues for the public. And we got a great talk about how we should address these things going forward.
But when you talk about these hacks, you've been hacking since you were very young in the 1980s, as I understand it. How difficult is it to hack stuff like this? I mean, should we be afraid that people would hack our iPhones still or our self-driving cars? Or
I think the biggest problem with hacking is that people have been tainted by what they've seen in the media. And it's one of the reasons I got involved in helping Mr. Robot. The media portrays hackers as scary individuals wearing hoodies who do these nasty things. And yes, there are cyber criminals out there who do bad things, but not all hackers are bad. They're not people you should fear, and you shouldn't spend your life fearing that someone's going to hack stuff. If you take most of the basic precautions that are advised to you, use a strong password, use a password manager, keep your devices updated, don't click on strange links, you will rule out 80% of the hacks that are out there. And the reality is, are you going to be a victim of an APT from a nation state? I can almost guarantee the answer is no. So, you know, don't worry about it. Take sensible precautions and see where you go. You'll be fine.
På bedste hackervis, som handler det for Mark Rogers om, at man skal lære at skille sin teknik ad sin hardware. Den skal man kunne skille ad og samle igen for at forstå, hvordan den fungerer. Det er sådan, han selv har lært at begå sig i den tekniske verden, om man så må sige. Da han var knægt i England, der havde han sådan et lille kemikersæt, som han gik rundt og legede med derhjemme. Og i dag siger han, at alle børn bør lege med, hvad der er inde i de digitale dimser. Derfor har han en mission om at lave en platform, en billig platform, så alle børn kan få en lille billig computer, som de kan lære at programmere på.
I want them to have classes that teach them about safety, and that does mean access to technology. We can't put the genie back in the bottle. Technology is out there. If you get a job, you leave school, and you go and get yourself a job, you will be working with technology. No question. Like any industry in the world, think of a job. Name me a job that white-collar job or an engineering job or anything like that that doesn't involve using computers. There aren't any. So why aren't we teaching our children to use them? You know, it doesn't make sense. Teach our children to use the best tools that are available. And yes, those tools have to be used responsibly. And so maybe limit screen time or the things that some of them are doing, save it for class. Like, take a chemistry class. I used to play with things like sodium and cesium in my chemistry class. I didn't take it home. I didn't play with it outside of the classroom setting. How's that any different from using technology? It isn't. It's just fear of the unknown that is making people take knee-jerk reactions to limit things. And unfortunately, it's leaving our children at a disadvantage. Children who have no cyber education when they leave are tomorrow's victims.
Because everything is becoming information technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Name one thing that doesn't touch information technology. These kids are going to need to use information technology to vote, to go to the library, to use the bus, to go to the cinema, to buy things, to have a bank and do financial transactions. When they go into even a fast food job, they're going to have to know how to use a till and how to change till rolls and do it. It's all technological stuff. And if we don't teach our kids how to be familiar with it and how to not be afraid of it and how not to recognize the challenges that appear, something's weird's happening. What should I do? Ignore it or report it to somebody? Like, just that simple thing. If we don't teach our kids that, then we are leaving ourselves wide open.
But isn't it becoming increasingly difficult to get under the hood of technology today?
Absolutely. And the more complex technology becomes, the harder it's going to be for the consumer to do something about it. I do have a fear that we're going to end up with a lot more disposable technology, you know, things that are so complicated, so tiny, so embedded that when they go wrong, we throw them away. That terrifies me because that is a terrible, terrible way to treat our planet and its resources. But on the other hand, maybe what we need is to breed a new generation of people who are trained in addressing these things. And here is a new skill set for people, engineering highly complicated or fixing highly complicated systems. Like, most of the stuff that people throw out can be fixed. We just need to teach them how to do it. I mean, the reason I tear things apart is to see how they work, because I'm genuinely curious, and also because I like to ultimately try and fix things. But the way I'm trying to fix all the other issues is I'm getting myself into education, I'm building a curriculum to help schools, I'm offering my assistance to various schools. I'm hoping to start a project with a friend to build a ultra cheap, and I mean sub $20, hardware platform that kids can use as a training platform at home that plugs into their TV, that's cheap enough no one wants to steal it but has enough interesting things on it they can learn from it. The BBC did this phenomenally with something called the Microbit. I think things like that, exercises like that, will help build the foundation for the future.
Men udover at forberede børn til at kunne forstå teknologi i fremtiden, så er han også meget bekymret for hacker og for informationskrig og for cyberkrig i det hele taget. Og det var derfor, jeg faktisk mødte ham til cybersikkerhedskonferencen i Tel Aviv i sommeren 2019, hvor han holdt foredrag om netop cyberkrig og hacking.
Yesterday you talked about information warfare on stage. You said that it's the next front line for cybersecurity. When you use the phrase information warfare, what exactly do you think of? Is it fake news, or is it actual hacking? Or
it's a lot of things. In the hacker community, we have known about it for years. We call it social engineering. Social engineering is a form of psychology. What you do is you use tell words, you use methodologies to trick people into thinking along the lines the way you want them to think. That's actually not that dissimilar from the way hacking works. In hacking, I do things, I put input into a program to make it behave in a way that I want it to behave, not the way it wants to behave. Humans are the same. You can program humans. You can drop special words into them. I've seen fascinating examples of this. Like, for example, when I was in Korea, the way the Korean kids learn English is they learn it by rote. And so they all sit down in class and the teacher says, "Hello class, how are you?" And every student responds immediately, "I'm fine, and you?" Well, if you walk past a group of Korean children and you say, "Hey, hello, how are you?" They will all turn to you and immediately say, "I'm fine, and you?" And then they'll look at you very confused. "Why did I say that?" Because it was a verbal cue sitting there waiting to be triggered. We're just computers. We're organic computers. And so information warfare is anything that adapts that kind of stuff. It can involve hacking, but hacking is more of a vehicle to get the tools and information out for them to do stuff. It's more about presenting information that will resonate with either thoughts that are already inside somebody, or plant new thoughts inside someone and change their way of thinking. And it's, you know, information warfare has been going on for a long time. There are some fascinating pieces of propaganda that have circulated for hundreds of years. It's all the same thing. The only difference is the social networks have emerged, and suddenly now, one man with a computer can send out millions of pieces of propaganda or information or disinformation. One person using social media can now reach millions of people with information that will affect stuff. The biggest challenge with information warfare is how we deal with it. And right now, the response from most of the companies, especially from social media companies, is woefully inadequate. You can't expect to put a label on something that is a complete complete lie that says, don't look at this, it's a lie. Because in fact, all that does is makes it a million times more interesting. And many, many more people will download it. We have to come up with ways to neutralize it and stop it from spreading and stop it from reaching the people who aren't skilled enough to deal with it. And then in parallel, we need to arm our citizens with the skills to query, challenge, and identify misinformation so that they can remove it themselves. It's the only way we will combat it.
Could I ask you one last question then? Because one of the words that has been repeated over the last 2 days is trust. But if you're living in a society with a lot of social engineering, how do you create trust between people?
It's a really hard thing. The biggest challenge I see at the moment is polarization. People have massively opposing views. We have to start learning how to cross the divide and start talking to each other. It's why I personally encourage people with views that I completely disagree with and people whose views I really agree with to talk, and I never censor any of them and I always engage them. And we need to encourage that as a methodology to say all views have their validity unless they're completely untruthful, and work towards bridging some of those gaps. It's the only way we're going to do it. Now, we can help with some things, like, for example, getting rid of the media's vilification of certain groups. That has to be gotten rid of. There are groups like political groups, there are non-political groups like hackers. Vilification of those groups does no one any good, because ultimately what happens is the public sees them as dangerous.
So, being involved in all these very public things, TV series and so on, and doing talks, what is it that you hope to achieve as a white hat hacker by doing this?
There's a lot of different things I hope to achieve. So, first of all, I want to reclaim the word hacker. Hacker was originally developed by the MIT in the 1970s. It was the MIT Model Railway Club. And a hack was any modification of an existing system that didn't destroy it. It wasn't about breaking into something. It was about changing things. I want to reclaim that. I also want to change the image that the public and the media have of what a hacker is. We aren't scary people. We are potentially the people who are going to help our countries defend themselves from the new generation of cyber weapons and information warfare that is becoming all too common. We are the best skilled people to do that, but they have to lose that fear. The other thing I want to do is I want to fix things that are dangerously vulnerable. The hack I did at Tesla and some of the other car work I've done, can you imagine, as cars become more connected, how terrifying it would be if someone could remotely get into your car, modify it, and then tamper with the vehicle safety critical systems. Like, take the braking ECU. If I could get into your car via the infotainment system and disable your braking ECU, you'd be in terrible trouble. All these things are avoidable. The problem is, we develop, as engineers, we build things in silos. We build for our industry, and we don't think about the issues that other industries have had. Some things cross it. Safety. Most companies and most engineering firms do amazing work when it comes to safety. But when it comes to cyber, very few do much. I'm working at the moment with a number of big engineering firms in London, helping them establish cybersecurity practices, because they've never had any. It's not been a thing for them. If you talk to them about energy efficiency and say you want to get LEED gold or LEED platinum, no problem, they understand exactly what you're talking about. If you want to tell them that, hey, you know what, that tenant control system you're gonna put in that connects to the BMS inside the building is actually running an operating system that was deprecated 3 years before you put the building up, and the building's got another 50 years to go, they look at you blankly, and that is something we have to overcome. And the other challenge with it is, why are we solving these problems industry after industry? If I fix a problem in an automotive industry, I should fix that problem across all of the industries. And somehow we have to come up with a way to do that. And the last thing is education. I want people to recognize that we have an amazing, talented youth coming out of our schools. My kids use computers in ways that just blow my mind. If we don't take steps to harness them, to show them the path and fast track them early and turn them into experts, especially the ones that are passionate about it, then we can have huge problems. You can't scale a handful of hackers to solve a nation's problems, but if you arm all of the citizens by giving them the basic tools and the ones who are more skilled, more advanced tools, you can turn an entire nation into its own immune system.
Jeg linker til Mark Rogers fra tektopia.dk. Du kan som altid skrive til mig på henriksnabla@tektopia.dk, eller du kan deltage i diskussionen i vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Tektopia Backstage. Og så kan du følge programmet på Twitter på snabelag.twitter.dk. Du kan også høre den anden udgave af Tektopia på Radio 4, der sender hver søndag kl. 13.05, eller kan hentes som podcast på radio4.dk. Den førstkommende søndag her, der er vi til CES i Las Vegas, der er verdens største tech- og elektronikkonference. Og her skal vi kigge blandt andet på fremtidens biler og på en sjov elektrisk tandbørste, og på teknologi, der gør, at man kan styre en computer med hjernens kraft. Alt det og meget mere kan du høre i Tektopia, både her som podcast og på Radio 4. Der er kun tilbage at sige på genhør og god fornøjelse.
I do like 70s punk music.
Tektopia. Tech-topia.